There is no health without mental health. This is Mental Wealth on 103.2 Dublin City FM with Brian Green.
Sometimes we start the show with the big booming jingle, sometimes we don't. It's Mental Wealth with Brian Green. Good afternoon. On today's programme, the last of 2018. Can you believe it? The year has flown by. On today's programme, a look back at some of the programmes that have never been repeated because of time sensitivity issues and other things, but there's some great programmes back in the archive. And I'm going to be talking with Coleman Nochter, Stephanie Regan, John Lonergan from last week's programme, but the interview in full, which got cut for time reasons, and also going to be speaking with Harriet Parsons from Bodywise, all to come in the programme today. If you want to get in touch over the seasonal period, you can email us. It's mentalwealth@dublincityfm.ie. So to today's programme, and the first interview goes back to January 2018, and I was talking with a good friend of the programme, Coleman Nochter, child and adolescent psychotherapist. And Coleman is a bit of an expert on all things technology and how we use them and how it's affecting us. And I asked him for his top tips on technology.
I think that advice has probably changed over time, and maybe even since the last time we spoke. I mean, the initial worry around this was screen time. So it was about limiting the amount of time that, people spend on screen. I think my thoughts on that have probably evolved since then. And for me now, it's really about the difference between time spent and time well spent. And I draw the difference to that in the sense that a young person who spends an hour on YouTube, you're watching a tutorial to learn how to play a song on the guitar, may well be a very useful use of that time. And so that's an hour of time online that's well spent. Whereas a child who spends an hour online going through other people's profile pictures and, you know, negatively comparing themselves to that, or spends time checking for updates on likes, etc., that kind of is time not well spent, because that erodes that sense of self. And so for me, I think my issue now is not so much regulation of time spent, but actually encouraging time well spent and getting young people to be able to decipher the difference between what is time spent and well spent. And I think the more I understand about this, I think the social media companies are not in the... It's not in their interest to promote time well spent. I mean, at the end of the day, it's time on screen is what pays the bills. And so they'll introduce everything that will encourage us to spend more time on screen without, I guess, any ethical obligation to limit that if someone's spending too much time doing that, or to direct somebody to something more healthy. And so for me, the crux of the talk is trying to teach parents and children within families to be critical consumers of the technology, to not be seduced by the next play, the next video, or the autoplay, the next video, not to almost, just because Facebook or Google or whoever it is wants to give us donuts 24 hours a day, that we almost have an internal regulation to say, actually, I've had enough donuts, I need to eat some greens.
The smartphone is bringing all this to us right into our pocket, right into our dinner tables, right into our living rooms, and it's kind of, you know, buzzing away, you know, with alerts and push information to say something new has happened. There's a little red number on a blue dot telling you how popular you are, and they're working really hard to increase our time on site so that their advertising gets more watched, so we really haven't got much chance against them, do we?
Well, we don't. I mean, if for example, you like to click into, I guess, links that outrage, that, you know, that are about outrage, and Facebook or whoever it is, the company that might, they cotton on to that and say, Brian Green likes being outraged, let's send him loads of outrage. And so they are almost scheduling times of your day so that when you wake up in the morning, there's 4 notifications of the latest outrageous thing that has happened, which will seduce you in. And I guess that's my point. I mean, if
I like cats, they'll send me cats.
Exactly. The more time you do something, and there's no ethical obligation. And this is it. If you imagine that Google and Apple are the town planners of a village that we occupy, there's no impetus on them to put in disabled parking spaces, to widen the footpaths, to encourage green areas. It is what you want, not what you need. So if I'm a child and I like donuts and I wake up in the morning, it's almost like the notifications are, there's a donut on my bedside locker. And then I go to sit down to have my porridge, there's another donut. And then I go there and I'm having my lunch and going through my lunchbox, and there's another donut. So it's not about what we need, it's about what we want. And I guess if we're not critical consumers of that, we will just become seduced and more seduced and more seduced to spend more time on screen that's just time spent and not time well spent.
Coleman Nocter there, and you can get more details from Coleman from his website, colemannocter.com. That's colemannocter.com. Next, we go to the issue of workplace bullying. In February 2018, I got to speak with Stephanie Regan. Stephanie is with eapaireland.ie. They launched a campaign called Triple Test Your Talk. Is it true? Is it necessary? Is it helpful? No gossip, no backbiting equals bully free. I spoke to Stephanie about what her campaign was all about.
The campaign, we have called it Triple Test for Bullying. We also had a working title of It's Everybody's Business, trying to focus on the business aspect, if you like. Bullying, it's everybody's business. But really, as we've come to roll it out, the Triple Test for Bullying is what we're calling it, because people can relate to that exactly. Because what we're really asking organisations to do, big and small, through their HR people, and also through our members, the members of our Employee Assistance Professionals Association that are launching this campaign, we are asking those members through their organisations to kind of disperse this message, to get this message out. And it's largely a poster campaign, but we can align it with talks for people as well if they want it. And what we've done is, on the poster campaign, we have three campaigns, because we believe three posters giving three messages. And essentially, the first poster will say, triple test your thinking. And the second poster is, triple test what you say. And the third is, triple test what you do. Now, it seems fairly simple. There are three of them, and it's really just to get people to think again. Think about the kind of things you're already, how would I say, assuming about bullying. Because a lot of people, we find, they've kind of ideas in their head about it. And those ideas aren't always right. For example, we would often hear people say, they would say things like, I think some people see bullying everywhere. Or people feel they're bullied even if they're told what to do. Or haven't people got that kind of personality? They just kind of draw that kind of behaviour to them. So we were quite aware, and I mean, obviously we've looked at the research around this, that dispelling a few of those myths would be a great service to those people who are bullied in the workplace. And it would change people's minds, change people's kind of attitudes. So we can't do it all. You know, you can't do everything, but we know that a small step can make a good impact.
So it's a triple test what you think, say, do. Is it mainly aimed at employers or employees, or are they to be differentiated at all?
Yeah, not really. A really good question. It is not really to differentiate them at all. While each have slightly different environments, in the sense that, you know, one is perhaps delivering the directions, etc. Like if you're a manager and the staff member, in another way. But we're all in the same workplace, in the same kind of conversation speak, if you like. And triple testing your assumptions really applies to everybody and what people say and do. It applies to everybody equally, but slightly differently.
When this kind of happens in a workplace, it usually at some point will come to a head. It might have festered for a while, but eventually it'll come to a head. And employee will probably be in talks with HR or their union or both, and they're getting around the table. Is it for human resources departments to really get this right at the policy level so that when these things come up that they have it in writing and everybody knows where they stand?
Well, I think, you see, at the moment, we're quite heavy on policy and guideline. You know, the Health and Safety Authority, they really are the kind of, you know, the governing kind of agency for this, in the sense, but strictly in the sense of helping to define policy and guarding policy and say guidelines. But they don't have any other actual, how would I say, function in the context of bullying in the workplace. And I feel we've quite a bit in that sense of available in the written word. People can go and find out what it is, what to do, what kind of guidelines, what kind of policy to develop. But I think, and of course, our experience arises really from being counsellors in the workplace and kind of really feeling what is going on. What I feel is missing is this preventative layer, this layer of prevention, where how do we make sure that things don't go wrong? How do we try and capture what might be going on in the workplace that is allowing bullying to develop? And one of them is the myth, as I mentioned. People thinking that people who complain about bullying, that really it's not a valid complaint, you know? So there's a bit of that going on in the thinking that, oh, people maybe deserve it. Maybe it's, as I say, it draws it upon them. The other thing that I think allows bullying to fester and to kind of thrive in the workplace is what we call, you know, gossip and backbiting, you know, damaging people's reputation, listening to bad stuff about people. If somebody had said to you before we sat down here, if somebody had told you something very negative about me, like, oh, did you know the girl was up for stealing or something, you know, well, you'd be kind of looking at me slightly differently and thinking, oh, she comes across quite well, but hard to believe she was up, you know, doing that. So it's filtering how you're viewing me. And so we're trying to encourage this, as I say, triple test your talk. Why are you telling people, or indeed, why are you listening to information about other people if it's not, for example, true, if it's not necessary, if it's not important information, and if it's not helpful? Why are we listening to it in the workplace?
Stephanie Regan talking to me in February about bullying in the workplace. More details from eapaireland.ie. And next to something that we like to return to now and again on the programme, it's eating disorders and body-wise. I spoke with Harriet Parsons about a new programme they have called the Pillar Programme, and it's for families, she explains.
Yeah, I guess about 3 years ago, we started to realise that families who were coming to the support group wanted more than just the support group space, that they had lots of questions, that they had different types of needs that the support group, you know, than what the support group provides them with. So we had also been finding that across the country that when we set up a support group that they didn't really last, you know, that people didn't really attend, and that there might be great enthusiasm at the beginning, but that very quickly they would fizzle out, whether that's stigma, you know, whether it's where there's a smaller population, people are more nervous about going to a group, for whatever reason.
Could it be that people got the information that they wanted and were then happy to just retreat from the group?
It might have been that at a particular time they felt they needed support, and then it wasn't an ongoing thing for them. But I suppose what we felt listening to parents through the helpline and through the email was that they want more. They want to understand. They want to be able to understand so that they can support a person in their house who might have an eating disorder, or a child who has an eating disorder. And that not only did they want the knowledge, but they also wanted skills and tools. They wanted really practical stuff to know what to say and what to do in particular situations. So on the back of that, then we decided that we would try to put together a programme, which we piloted in Sligo at the time, and we call it our PILR programmes. That's based on the idea of peer-led resilience, where families come together and we work with them for one evening a week for 4 weeks. So for 2 hours on an evening for 4 weeks. And in that program, what we do is we provide really, really helpful understanding about eating disorders, really helpful education aspects around understanding eating disorders, understanding the mindset of a person with an eating disorder, understanding the way they feel, the way they think, and why they're doing what they're doing. As well as that, then we provide them with skills. So, you know, how to talk to someone, how to have a conversation, how to tackle difficult things. And I suppose we're also coming from a knowledge about treatment and treatment approaches that are out there. So with children, there are particular treatment approaches. And with adults, there are different treatment approaches. And I suppose we understand those approaches so people can come and they can ask questions about what they don't understand about it, or how can they support their person better through it. So having them there for the 4 weeks in a group really allows us the space and the time to work through all of those issues. And one of the main feedbacks that we get on our, you know, for our feedback from all the parents is that they have found it incredibly helpful just sitting in a room with other families who are going through something similar. I think in particular for those families who might have a son who has an eating disorder, that they find it really helpful to meet other parents who also might have a son.
Solidarity.
I suppose it's just what we hear is that they often feel like they're on their own, that nobody understands, that they don't feel they can talk to anyone. Eating disorders are so complicated and they're so divisive and they're so secretive. It can be really hard for families to manage it at home. And also, it takes time to recover. So it's not something that will be done and dusted in a few weeks. You know, it can take a longer time. So they really need to know that there are other people who have walked that path, or who are walking that path alongside them, or who they can support as well, who might be beginning. So, you know, the feedback has been really, really excellent. And I suppose when we're doing the program, we do it in different locations around the country. Those locations are put up on our website, and we also have a waiting list. So anyone can get in touch and just give us their name and contact details, and we will let them know when there's one near them. The other important thing, I guess, is to say is that we always try and do it in conjunction with a HSE treatment programme or you know, a CAM centre or an adult mental health centre. But it's open to everyone. So be open to the people who are connected with that HSE service, but it's also open to, you know, anybody in who, you know, whether they're in treatment or not. And in that way, then we can, you know, encourage people to get help, to make that step towards finding treatment.
Harriet Parsons from Bodywhise. They're at bodywhise.ie, that's spelled BODYWHYS.ie. And we know here on the programme that Christmas can be a difficult time for people with eating disorders and food related issues. So if you want any tips or advice, do head along bodywhise.ie. Finally, on today's programme, not too far back into the archive because it's from last week, we did a wonderful programme on social exclusion, social inclusion, and a wonderful interview with John Lonergan, the former governor of Mountjoy Prison. We didn't get to broadcast all of it because of time constraints, so today we can. I began by asking John what he's up to these days.
I've kept busy enough, really. I'm lucky enough to have lots of invitations like tonight. I go to a lot of schools, talking to secondary, particularly grade students from transition year upwards. I talk a lot to parents because I've been doing a little parenting talk for about 25 years. I find that very useful. It's sharing my own experience, probably, and maybe I could even say wisdom, of after rearing my own family and having experience of the prison. And being able to share some of that and highlighting the things that really matter as parenting for parents. So I'm kept busy enough and I keep fit. And I have great health, thanks, you know, touch wood, and that enables me to be still very active.
Brilliant. From my notes, from your keynote, you say that exclusion, social exclusion, and the lack of inclusion can begin with self-worth.
Well, I believe that one of the first major consequences of social exclusion is the lowering of self-worth, or almost the elimination of it. I'd go so far as to say that people don't feel of any value. They're not treated and respected as having any value in society. They're not connected into mainstream society. They feel alienated and excluded, and that has a major consequence for them in terms of how they feel about themselves. And if you don't feel good about yourself, well, then you're really in trouble, because everything that happens to you is acceptable, and you don't necessarily have the fight or the spirit to challenge and to fight back.
The kind of self-worth that's lacking, where is it found? Where can it be? It can't be purchased down the local shop. How do we instill that into young people?
It's all about encouraging them, praising them, giving them, looking for the positives in them, looking for the gifts they have, and every human being, in my view, has a special and unique gift. It's about that. It's about encouraging them. It's about giving them recognition. It's about listening to what they have to say, and it's about taking notes of what they have to say and showing that you do genuinely. If we are an inclusive society, then we have to be a tolerant society, and that means that we tolerate people, even those who we disagree with. We accept their right to be who they are, and for me that's the fundamental thing. It's not what I want them to do, it's what they want to do themselves, and we should be able to facilitate them to do that.
You said you can't force change. Tell us about that.
Social change, no, you cannot force it. You can make people agree, and you can make people to consent to things, but if their hearts aren't in it and their minds aren't in it. So the real change I'm talking about is the change that comes from within. But what you can do is you can nurture it, you can lead it, and you can encourage it. But at the end of the day, you have to respect the individual person to have the right to control his or her life, and that's what I mean. So if somebody wants to remain homeless, I don't have any difficulty with that, as long as that's their decision, and as long as then that they're given every support and respect during that period. I don't think I have the right to force people into houses. If they don't want to go into houses, that's their right. But I have a responsibility to ensure that they have every option available to them, and whatever option they take, that I support that. That's the principle of a republic, that we respect each and every individual as an individual.
That was going to be my next question. It is going to be my next question with regard to us being a young state, but we're like coming up on a 100 years old young state, 102 years after the proclamation, which had those wonderful words about equality and treating everyone equally. We're way far from it, aren't we?
Yeah, or miles. It's not even on the horizon at the moment. As a matter of fact, as I said tonight, I think it got worse in the last 5 or 6 years again, after the consequences of the Celtic Tiger collapse. Poorer areas got savaged cuts in proportion to where they were at, and the loss of those resources and facilities, like youth work and facilities and public health nurses and all the sort of infrastructure that they absolutely are essential, they were all cut back. And the consequences of that. So the gap is widening, and we have thousands, as I said tonight, the hidden poverty, which is the stuff that I'm really concerned about. We have thousands of children in Ireland today that will never reach their potential, and that means that the proclamation is just pie in the sky for them.
Is official Ireland, the Dáil, the Seanad, the permanent infrastructure beneath them, living in cloud cuckoo land, thinking that there's equality when there probably is absolutely none?
The political system is all about expediency and popularity. That's what our system is about. It's fundamentally about getting re-elected. There are some fantastic social justice people in the Dáil, in all parties, who really do understand and who keep voicing it. But the problem for them is that they're not in a majority. They don't have the power. And if they'll never get the power, because there won't be enough of people out there who will really identify with their cause and with their philosophy, and therefore won't vote for them. So what the people like that have to do is to keep away, banging away at the drum, trying to make the noise and trying to get people to listen. But I mean, that's what I said tonight. I said it's not them. We must all begin to realise that it is us. It's our responsibility to have a just and equal society and an inclusive society. And we can't be seeing people who are struggling in life to be wasters or to be inferior citizens. They're us, and we must take that responsibility. And that means, if we did, that we would be indicating to government the sort of policies that we would support to enable the government to deliver real social inclusion. Because social inclusion will cost a lot of money. The end product, though, is worth it, because you'll have a far more cohesive, fairer and just society.
And safer, may I say, as well.
You said it's going to be a really difficult journey as they start out to build this forum and seek inclusion for all of Ireland, what's the first thing they should look at to do? And this is my last question.
Well, my view is that the first thing, as I was sitting there tonight, is that they need to settle, to discuss, debate, and then agree on the vision that, and the journey and the roadmap that they're going to follow. Because you need to know where you're going. Otherwise, you can go anywhere. And this is a task that's going to take time. The one thing I'd be saying is your strategy must be long term. There's not going to be instant results, minor results, but not instant. So it's a long-term policy to influence policy, government strategy, to help people to change, you know, to see, recognize their rights and their needs, and to be able to fight in their own little areas to deliver that. So at the end of the day, it's about delivering services on an equal basis and on a needs basis to communities that at the moment are very much out of the cold.
John Lonergan, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
John Lonergan speaking to me last week at the launch of inclusionhealth.net's forum. You can get more details from their website, inclusionhealth.net, or email inclusionhealth@tcd.ie. This is 103.2 Dublin City FM, the Mental Wealth Show with Brian Green, the last for the year. I want to wish all our listeners a very happy Christmas and a happy new year as well. Don't feel alone. Do reach out, do talk to people, visit a neighbour, and do have a peaceful, calm and mindful Christmas. From myself, until next year on the programme, take care and goodbye.
Turn the white snow red as strawberries.